an ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's great to be here. Great show planned tonight. It's the two Diane night, I call it, and our first guest, Diane Diamond, is a investigative reporter and author. She's probably one of the busiest gals in the entertainment business, in the news business, and all along, and it's always great to have her. Diane, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me, Dana. Good. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. Listen, before we get started, lots to talk about tonight. I got to ask your thoughts, because I'm doing this with all my guests, about this dopey election that's going on in your country. Have you seen anything like this? Is it crazy?
Never. And, you know, I used to cover Capitol Hill. I lived in Washington for many years and covered the White House and covered Capitol Hill, and I know the way politicians behave. And I've never seen anything like this. It's crazy. It's kooky. It's dopey, as you say.
You know, you're much younger than I am. No. We're I think, about the same age, and I've seen a lot of elections through the years in the States and Canada, but this has got to be one that takes the cake. But as someone who has lived in Washington, has covered Washington, and has seen what's gone on, what about the media coverage of this kookiness, as we like to call it?
Well, I'll tell you, now you've touched a sore point with me, because I think, you know, I think the media helped create Donald Trump.
Yep.
Because he was so outrageously different than any other politician we'd ever seen before. The media hung on every word and broadcast every word and wrote about every word he said. And so that we are now left with this monster of a candidate, so to speak. So I think the bottom line for me, I mean, I used to travel with presidential candidates, lots of them, lots of different ones, and I've never seen so little follow-up on questions asked to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
They ask a question, he answers in a crazy, wacky way, unconventional way, let's say, and there's never any follow-up. There's never any, excuse me, sir, you did not answer my question. My question was, and so that I think the public at large is left confused, scratching their heads with two candidates that neither one are very popular.
And you're right. The only one that I've seen come close to it, and you don't know how much of it is staged or not, is O'Reilly. He'll challenge him every so often. But that's about it. But anyway, let's get away from that nonsense. And over the years when I've interviewed you, we've talked about a lot of different stories. You've authored books. You've covered crime stories. And something that's become very popular here in the last little while are these little mini anthologies, little mini series, documentaries, whatever you want to call them, like Making a Murderer on Netflix, the O.J. Documentaries that have come out. What about those? They're very popular, in my opinion, slanted in some ways, but we're supposed to be hearing some now from the Menendez brothers and others. Is this a new sign of the times?
It is, absolutely. And I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time last week getting ready for and then spending an entire day, I mean hours and hours and hours, filming a special for ID, Investigation Discovery, on the JonBenet Ramsey case. And they're planning three nights in a row, hour-long specials on the JonBenet Ramsey case, maybe even four nights. They're trying to figure that out. So, yeah, I think it is very much the wave of the future. You know, it's like there's no new stories, so you have to go, you have to look back at them. But they were so sensational. The Menendez brothers I know about, but I did not cover that case. The O.J. case, I was in Hollywood for that. The JonBenet case, I was on the ground in Boulder, Colorado. These are stories for reporters that stick with you for the rest of your life. I mean, I'll never forget walking up, being the only reporter, the first reporter, on the scene on Bundy Avenue where Nicole Brown Simpson's body was just being taken away by the morgue truck. Two trucks, one for Ron Goldman and one for her. And they pulled away, and there was a sidewalk full of blood.
Yeah.
And no police to keep us away, and my cameraman and I went in and shot the whole scene. But, again, these are the stories you never, ever forget. And I guess the public doesn't forget them either.
And you're right. I didn't particularly care for the one on FX with John Travolta. In fact, I couldn't watch it. But the most recent one on, I think it was ESPN or something like that, was actually pretty good. It was four or five parts.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong when you look at these types of stories. As far as JonBenet Ramsey goes, as you know, I interviewed that John Mark Carr, and to this day, after all the years I've been doing this, he's got to be the most creepiest SOB that I ever talked to, and I never did air the interview. That's one scary cat, and I hear...
Oh, you never did air the interview?
I didn't. No, I refused to, because it was so rambling, it was so stupid, that it made no sense. But yeah, you're right, and we'll have to watch Investigation Discovery for that. It's a story for sure. Now, something that you've been working on, Diane Diamond's here, and you can click on the link in the show notes to get to her webpage, is something that I find very interesting. You don't hear enough about it, and it's elder guardianships. And you call it a shameful racket in America, and elder abuse is a big problem, but a story that we don't hear too much about.
Right, and I'm taking sort of an unconventional look at it, Dana. You hear the words elder abuse, and you think, oh gosh, someone is physically mistreating an old person, and that happens all too often. But what I've been finding out and discovering and investigating for months and months now is this court-sponsored racket, as you say, that has grown up around the elderly and their estates. And here it is, simply put. I first heard about a woman in Pennsylvania who, she and her husband lived in a retirement community. 72 years they were married. Jeez. Can you imagine?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And he passed away. Now, she wants to leave and go to, they had both been in sort of, not intensive care, but in the medical unit there, because she had slipped down and fallen, and he had passed away. He had cancer. So she now, he's gone, and she doesn't want to stay there. She wants to move to Annapolis, Maryland, where her two kids live that she loves, and they come to visit her all the time.
Right.
But her other son, who lives in Pennsylvania, doesn't want that to happen, so he takes the whole matter to court. Jeez. I am here to tell you, anyone who can hear my voice, don't let a sibling squabble wind up in court. Because what I have found has happened all across the country, California, Texas, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico is terrible, Florida, Pennsylvania, Maryland, the judges in the case are overworked maybe. They don't want to figure out which sibling is right and which sibling is wrong. And so they just say, hey, you're a dysfunctional family. I'm appointing a guardian for this elderly person.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds kind of nice. You know, some people need a guardian, and there are great guardians around. But what's happening way too often is these guardians now have complete control of the elder person's life. The elder person has they have fewer rights than a convicted murderer. They can't spend their money. They can't decide where they live. They can't say who gets to come and visit them, what medications they take, how their money is spent. They're kept in the dark. And a guardian will charge up to $300 and $400 an hour just to take a phone call from your kids who call and say, when can I visit my mother next?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And if you need a new pair of pajamas, I found a case in Florida. I'm calling this chapter in a book I'm writing, the $2,500 pair of pajamas. Old lady needs a pair of pajamas. The nursing home calls the guardian. The guardian says, I don't shop for people. She hires a personal shopper.
Yes.
Personal shopper goes out to shop. Has to call the guardian a couple of times to say, you know, what color, what size again. Anyway, it all totals $2,500 to get this poor old lady a new pair of pajamas at Target. That cost about $19.99.
Isn't that amazing?
So,
You know,
it's the kind of stuff that happens, and I think people don't know about it. They just haven't educated themselves, and when there are squabbles in families, somebody puffs up their chest and says, oh, yeah, I'm going to court. Well, beware, everybody. This is what can happen.
Well, and it's, you know, follow the money trail, and what about the elder who's, like you say, in this case, looking for somewhere to move? The family gets involved and courts, and I want you to talk a little bit more about these appointed guardians. Do they run a business? How do they come forward? How does the court know to appoint them?
Oh, gosh, these are all good questions. You know, California used to have a system where they had public guardians to help elderly people who really needed it. But this whole industry has cropped up that's a for-profit guardian programs, companies, corporations that have franchised out. These people get so power-hungry, I'll say, some of them, that they'll decide that the person who wound up in a nursing home because they fell down and broke their hip is never going to go home. They have to stay right where they are. Well, and to pay for it, I'm going to sell the house. So they sell the house and everything in it. And they sell it for pennies on the dollar just to get rid of it, sometimes to their friend who's a real estate agent. They sell the cars. They sell everything out from under. Now, how does the court know to appoint them? There's this whole weird trolling system I found that goes on. These guardians will hang around emergency rooms.
Jeez.
And see old people come in all by themselves. They'll go, I don't know if you see the show Better Call Saul.
Yes.
They just like in that show, they go to nursing homes and they give seminars about, you know, why don't you sign up with me? Make me your guardian. I'm here to help you. And so the elderly person will sign up because there's nobody else in their life. All of this, Dana, I have come to realize, is the largest shift of wealth this country has ever seen. The estates of these people who, you know, they worked hard all their lives and saved their money, the estates are not going to their heirs where they want their money to go. It's going to the guardians and the housekeepers they hire and the landscapers they hire and the personal shoppers that they hire. It's really an unspoken scandal that I want to educate the world about. It just makes me mad.
Absolutely. And you go to DianeDiamond.net and you can learn more about that. But what about the families that, like you say, that when you take a squabble to court, sometimes the judge is going to say, okay, you're all dysfunctional. I'm going to look after your mother for you. And it gets tighter. But what does a family do? What can they do in a situation like this if they have a guardian for their parent that they don't agree with and they got to try and get something changed?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's so sad. I have seen case after case after case after case where the child says, the bereaved child says, I can't stand to see my mother, father like this. I'm going to fight it in court. And they wind up depleting their entire retirement fund. And the judges, I have found, Dana, two cases where the guardian was dismissed and the person got their freedom back. Only two. And one of them was in Texas. This old guy owned a bunch of antique cars, very wealthy, and he had a mechanic fixing them. Well, he forgot to pay the bill and whatever. The mechanic went to court and won guardianship over this wealthy old man.
Jeez.
His family fought it. It took them 2 years, but they finally got it dismissed. So once you're in this tar baby, you cannot get out. Most of the time, you can't get out.
Diane Diamond's here. She's an investigative reporter, author, and a great friend to the show. Love having her on. Elder abuse, yeah, you hear about that. You've talked about guardianship, but there's the grandson or the nephew that gets in there also getting grandma to sign checks and pass over whatever they can to them. Sometimes it results in physical harm to them. What can people do if they suspect elder abuse? It could be a friend or another family member.
Right. I would say the best thing to do is call the Adult Protective Services Division in your state or close to you. You can call the police, but they will bring in the Adult Protective Services people with them. Now, having said that, be careful. I mean, I had a case, I have a case, where Adult Protective Services came in because the next-door neighbor called for a welfare check. I have this elderly couple. They live next door to me. They're going on a long trip every summer. They go away for 6 weeks to Kentucky, and I'm just worried about them. Will you check on them? So Adult Protective Services and the police go in. They check on them, and they find there's no food in the refrigerator because these people are going on a trip. They made a conscious decision.
Right.
They shut off their utilities, and they made this snap decision that, oh, these poor people, they're living with no food and no electricity, and, oh, my gosh, we've got to take them in. And do you know that couple never got to go home again? Adult Protective Services decided they were a danger to themselves when, in fact, they had their car outside packed up ready to take their annual trip to their cabin in Kentucky.
Oh, good grief. Yeah.
So be careful. Try to solve the problems yourself. If there is a danger and you know someone is stealing money from an elderly person or withholding medication or over-medicating them, you got to call somebody for help. Don't try to handle that yourself, but just beware to tell them the whole story of what you know about this elderly person so there's no misconceptions.
Diane Diamond's here, and we're talking about a little bit of everything. And the next I want to ask you a little bit about what we see, the Orlandos, the San Bernardinos, the mass shootings, the terrorist acts, you name it. All you got to do is wake up in the morning and turn on your TV or look at your computer. There's another something that's happened somewhere. They say the world changed in September 11th, 2001. Obviously it did. But what we see and what we hear, there's a lot of fear-mongering out there. There's the kooky right. There's the lax left. There's the you name it. There's no in-between. For somebody who's been in the media business and the entertainment business, the news business, and all of that for so long, what do you see that should be different, or is the way things are being covered, the way people are being informed, good right now, or should it be changed?
Yeah. No. Well, we're getting nowhere fast, aren't we? It is a whole new world, and like on every topic, guns or drugs or crime or politics or taxes, or this country is split 50-50. It's pretty much 50-50. We're a completely divided country. And what needs to happen? I think we need to wipe our prejudices and our biases out of our minds and say, oh, my God, what can we do about this? Now, it's the guns, I suppose, but it's also here in New York where I live, we've been living through a spate of slashings. This is like the new big thing. Some guy will come up right behind a man or a woman and just slash their face or slash their throat. So what, are we going to ban all the knives?
No.
I think, honestly, what we don't talk enough about in this country and in the world is mental health. And I know people are going to say, oh, that's a cop-out. No, it's not. Because you don't pick up a gun or a knife. I don't pick up a gun or a knife. I don't know any. My sane friends don't do this. It is the person who is mentally disturbed, maybe schizophrenic. There have been a lot of schizophrenic mass shooters in this country. We have to start thinking about how to help families who have young men, mostly, who are so disturbed that this is what they turn to. And I just, we went through in the 70s closing a bunch of mental institutions here in the United States because they were, according to the left, inhumane. And some of them were horrible. But instead of closing them all and letting all these people out on the street, we should have made them better. So all these years later, all these decades later, I'm still saying we need to make our mental health treatment system better and more inclusive. I remember talking to a woman in California whose son had shot up a grocery store, and she said, I tried for 18 months, I think she told me 18 months, to get my son a bed in the psychiatric unit, and there was no room.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens. When we don't treat the illness, we're all victims of the, we're all possible victims of the crime that results.
No, you're right. You're right. Absolutely right. That that hits the nail right on the head. Diane Diamond's here for about another 10 minutes, and we're talking about, well, you name it. And one of the things I want to talk a little bit about is Diane Diamond. You're very busy. You do lots. What have you, you know, we've talked about the elder abuse. You're writing a book. You're doing work for Investigation Discovery. What else have you been up to?
Well, I'll tell you right now, on every Wednesday is my syndicated column is due, and it runs on the weekend. I've got to get it in, and I've got to edit it and get it ready and typeset and all that. And so tonight I was just sitting here working on a column about the Hillary Clinton and lack of conviction.
Right.
And it just came over, as you called me, that the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, has decided, well, big surprise here, she's going to take the FBI's recommendation and not file any charges against Hillary.
Yeah.
So I started looking back. I looked at the law that pertains to this, and I looked at FBI Director Comey's comments about it, and he sure laid out a perfect case to try Mrs. Clinton for gross negligence with national security documents. But, of course, he didn't file, or he doesn't recommend that we do that. So the minute he had that news conference, my text, my phone, lit up with people I know that work within the Justice Department. And so my column is going to be about what the insiders say about what Comey did. And the bottom line is they're embarrassed.
Yeah. You know, watching him make his presentation eloquent, and then at the end when he said, but, or whatever he said, we're not going to recommend for any charges, Bill Clinton going to Lynch's airplane, all this stuff, the media is going to jump on that like a bird on a bug, and this is far from being over. She may not be charged with anything, but this is going to, you know, it's going to swing and keep swinging for quite some time. Now,
right.
I want
to... You know, I think the law is just not being equitably applied here.
That's right.
The Obama administration has done more charges against leakers or, and mishandlers of government documents than all the other administrations combined. They like their secret, damn it. They want to prosecute people that mishandle these kind of documents. Oh, except if it's Hillary.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's just not fair. That's the unfairness is what gets me.
Yep. Diane Diamond's here. I'm going to be a little bit controversial, and please forgive me. It's been in the media a lot today about a former show host, anchor, whatever you want to call it, at a big network, filing suit against one of the top honchos there. You can see I'm trying to be careful without saying names and everything else.
Oh, come on, let's just say it. Gretchen Carlson, who was recently fired from Fox
and
Network.
Fox News and Roger Ailes. Actually, I wanted you to prod me on a little bit and get me to say that. you know, this is something. And as a gal, as someone who has been in the business for a long time, I'd sure like to get your thoughts on
Gretchen. I'll tell you, I worked there. Right after September 11th happened, I got a call from Roger Ailes, who I have known for many years, just slightly, and he said, can you come and be a substitute host for me because I'm sending all my other people overseas? I said, sure. Paid me well. But I'll tell you what, there is a good old boys network thing there at Fox. It was when I was there. I was there for about less than a year, but for 8 or 9 months, I guess, I worked there. And it's a boys' shop. You do not complain. You got to wear your skirts short and your heels high. And you got to put lots of makeup on if you're a woman. And I had the hairdresser ask me, in like the last month I was there, if I would go blonde.
Oh, my God.
And I looked at her and I said, who asked you to ask me that? And she got all red in the face and she wouldn't, you know, answer. And I left there shortly after. I wasn't into the false eyelashes and the short skirts. And I'm a little older than the rest of them. So, look, I don't know exactly what happened with Gretchen Carlson, but I'm telling you, if what she says is true, and I'm not doubting it, she's one brave cookie.
Yep.
Because I'll tell you what, Roger Ailes is a guy who doesn't conduct a clean fight all the time, and I dare say that she is probably hammered in the nail on her career. I don't know that anyone will hire her again after this. That's not what happens in my industry. You know, it's happened in the past that some high-profile anchor person will file a sexual discrimination or age discrimination suit, a woman, and they never work again. So it must have been fairly bad for her to take this step, I would think. But again, I don't know all the details. It didn't surprise me, let me put it that way.
You know what? She's very brave. And I think back to a segment or a story I saw about Barbara Walters early on, and she talked about getting a note from John Wayne. And John Wayne sent a note to her saying, "Don't let the bastards get you down." And and I think Gretchen Carlson should be holding her head up high.
And you know, I'll tell you, I'm always on the internet. I'm always reading everything. On the Huffington Post this evening, there's a story that Gretchen Carlson isn't the only one who's complaining about this.
Yeah.
That's the headline, some sort of headline like that. And I read through it, and well, there's language in it I cannot even repeat here. But lots of other women who still work there or have worked there are coming out and saying she's absolutely right. There is sexism here. Good for her.
Yep, and I wondered if that was going to be a big roller coaster effect. Listen, Diane Diamond, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
I love coming on your show. Thanks, Dana, and say hi to Diane Fanning for me.
I will.
All righty.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's it. We're going to be back in just a minute with author Diane Fanning to talk about some high-profile crime cases in the news. And Gretchen Carlson, good for you. I'm glad that you've come forward. I'm Dana Pretzer. You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio and watching on Access Channel 7. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show, and it's a great pleasure to have as my next guest Diane Fanning. She's an author of 25 books, including Bitter Remains and 13 other true crime books, and Treason in the Secret City, the latest in a World War II mystery series. It's been some time, but always great to have you on the show. Hi, Diane.
Hi. How are you doing this evening, Dana?
It's fine. I'm fine. It's you know, I told you in my email what got me thinking about you is I happened to be flipping around the TV the other night, and I watched these crime shows, as we all do, a 48 hours episode of and there's old Steve Nodine, whatever his name is, that creepy bugger from Alabama on there. And I'm thinking, wow, that story goes back so far. It's a tragic story. It's one that, you know, you've written a book about. And I thought, I'm going to send Diane an email and see if I can get her back on the show. So that's what we did. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. I haven't watched the whole 48 hours with Steve Nodine, but just seeing him basking in attention was rather annoying.
You know, let's refresh the audience a little bit. I know I did two or three shows on that, and let's refresh the audience about Mr. Nodine.
Well, he was a county commissioner one time, a city councilman, and he was a married man, but he had an affair with Angel Downs for about 6 years while he was still married. And one night, Angel was found shot to death in her driveway. He says it was a suicide, but as far as I know, her family is still insisting it was homicide and he's responsible.
I thought 48 Hours did a pretty good job of it, recreating the incident. Of course, he's typical. He's turned religious. He says he's straightened out, but he's also got a history of gun and drug convictions. He's definitely not a good guy, but at one time, a very popular guy, was he not?
Oh, yeah, he was a big political figure. I mean, you can go online and see pictures of him with George W. Bush when he was president, and Newt Gingrich, and all sorts of people. I mean, he seemed to have quite a bit of sway in the political world. But, you know, I mean, here's a man that finally did the plea bargain that lets him get away with murder, and then what does he do? He violates parole by eating a marijuana brownie. I mean, come on.
You know, I'm laughing, but it's so pathetic. You're right.
You know, when you're in a position like that, and you show enough arrogance to go out in public with your mistress, show so little respect for your wife that you don't care who notices. You know, there's something missing in that character to start with, just from there.
Yeah, for sure. And the family of Angel Down are, like you say, they're still insisting and still hoping for justice. But as you know, sometimes justice doesn't come. Answers hopefully will come for the family. But, you know, nevertheless, Diane Fanning's here. She's an author of crime books. And you've really piqued my interest. I want you to talk a little bit about the World War II mystery series that you've been writing, A Treason in the Secret City. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it all started, actually, with Renella Dossett Leith. When I was doing that true crime book about her case, Her Deadly Web, there were a lot of amazing things I uncovered just learning about that story, including two medical examiners threatening law enforcement with firearms. But the thing that really piqued my interest was Oak Ridge and the story of Oak Ridge, because Raynella spent her teenage years there, and her father was one of the founders of the museum still there. And Oak Ridge was the place that processed the uranium that went into the bomb that fell on Hiroshima. And it was a very secret place. For a while, it didn't even have a name. And people there were very much into security, and they gave up a lot of freedoms that we take advantage of today and take for granted, but they willingly gave them up. I mean, a lot of wives would sit at home and not have any idea what their husband was doing at work, and things were so compartmentalized. If you didn't need to know, you just didn't know, and you accepted that fact. So it was a strange world, and that's why I set my World War II series there. And I had a female chemist, a young woman who had high ideals, and like many of the scientists involved in the Manhattan Project, had a lot of ambivalence about what they were doing and were torn in two directions. And they had a lot of questions about giving up some of their liberty for the sake of their freedom. It was and security. And it was a difficult time with a lot of questions on morals and principles that were surrounding the work they were doing. And they had to use code names, like they could never say the word uranium. It just wasn't allowed. And
right.
They couldn't talk about a bomb. It was a gadget. And into this setting, I put this chemist, and she had a roommate whose sister was murdered in the first book, and that was Scandal in the Secret City, and there was cover-up of that murder. And now in this second book, I actually go into, there were a number of spies at Oak Ridge, real spies, but they weren't actually identified until 1950. But in the book, I put some extra spies in there and had them caught in by certain people in the time frame of the book. And it happens over the period of time that D-Day was going on, and Libby was from the town, from the county of Bedford, and so she knew a lot of the people from Bedford that went into the D-Day operation. And Bedford, small town that it is, had the largest per capita loss in the D-Day operation. And that's why the D-Day Memorial is here.
That's right.
So,
yep. Yeah, the Diane Fanning is here talking about some of the books that she's been writing. And, Diane, I want to get your thoughts on a story that just popped up in the media here the other day about Casey Anthony. It's been 5 years. It's hard to believe, and I know you've written about this also, since she was acquitted. But you got to wonder about the media, and this is Associated Press, and it's been on Fox News and others, that is it really news that Casey Anthony is feeling bored 5 years later? I thought I was seeing things when I read that story.
I mean, really? She is not... She wants bored. She should be in prison.
That's right.
I mean, that's where she belongs. And if she wants to sit around and not be able to figure out what to do with herself, well, you know, it's a problem of her own making. And, you know, who's to say that boredom is not a good punishment for her? We can't have her in prison where she belongs, so why shouldn't she be bored? Why should she be out there enjoying life when her little baby girl didn't get to live past the age of 3?
You know, one of the quotes in the story says that she sort of lives like an old person on a fixed income without much going on in her life. I read that, and then I read it again, and I'm thinking, you know, these big organizations like Associated Press and Fox News and others, come on, you guys. Like, there's so much else going on in the world. Does Casey Anthony need any more publicity? Because this crap will get all the crazies more interested in her again. What about that? What about the media and how they cover some of these stories?
Well, you know, I was in sick of that thing before the trial even happened. My book came out pre-trial, and
right. Yep.
I did get everything right. I mean, there was not anything presented there that at trial that was any different, except for some of the little games that the defense played. But it was a frenzy. I mean, you know, it was like everybody wanted to fight to get the latest word, and if they'd been orderly, we were all there for the same purpose. But it was like a mob scene almost. It was kind of crazy, and they elevated this child killer up to a level of celebrity, and it was really kind of disturbing. And she seemed to revel in it at times.
Yeah. No, she'd double take to the camera, and she'd have the big smile on her face. And of course, the recent stories that have come out with the PI and Jose Baez and all that sort of stuff is just nuts. But I do want to ask you one more Anthony question. I did interview Cindy Anthony a couple of times while this story was going on. What do we know about her and George? They've kind of dropped out of sight. Is there anything new on them?
I have not heard anything about what's going on with them. You know, I didn't talk to either one of them because that's the request for money, and I don't pay for interviews. I did speak to some family members who are willing to talk to me and a lot of friends, but I'm not going to – you can't buy the truth, you know? I never did talk with either one of them, but their behavior was so bizarre while all this was going on. And it was like, you almost felt like they gave up on little Kaylee. They knew they were never going to find her. And so the only thing they had was Casey. And they were gonna defend her to the end, and then what did her defense do but throw her father under the bus?
Yeah.
I mean, it was bizarre.
Yeah, no, it's right, and you know, another story, and I'd like to ask you a little bit about is you know, the stories that we're seeing on Netflix, the Making a Murderer series. I'm not sure if you saw that. There's been some miniseries about OJ. Apparently, the Menendez brothers are going to be doing something, and the JonBenet Ramsey story has come back again. What about that? What about these stories being retold over and over again? Obviously, there's a public fascination for that.
Yes, there definitely is, but somehow it's giving a celebrity status to people that really don't deserve that. I mean, you look at the case of Michael Peterson, and there was a documentary called The Staircase about that, and the making of a serial killer and all this stuff has brought that out again. You're seeing that being replayed, and the fact of it was, when that documentary crew came to Durham, North Carolina, they were there, they were convinced from the day they walked into town that Michael Peterson was innocent, and they wanted to show that. When they first did that documentary, when they first turned in their final cut on that, they had not interviewed anyone on the prosecution team. They had not interviewed people unless they were supporting Michael Peterson. And so then they were told to go back. They had to get some of the other side in there. So they did add that on. But there was so much that was left out of that documentary that pointed to Michael Peterson's guilt. And the thing to me that was most damning was the red neurons found in her brain. And it proved that everything he said about that night was a lie. And yet now, because one of the forensic people were compromised and shown to not always use the best evidence, now he's been given a chance for another trial,
yeah.
And he's out. And so you've got the victims' families just sitting there in shock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the whole justice system has betrayed them.
And you're right, because a lot of these documentaries are slanted towards the accused, slanted towards corrupt police officers are saying that, slanted towards bad forensics. But when it comes to the victim, there's very little, if anything, told about them. Author Diane Fanning's here for about another 5 minutes, and I want to hear a little bit, because you're a very busy lady, what you're up to now and what you're working on.
Well, my the latest book that came out earlier this year was Bitter Remains, and it was about an actress, a musician, and an artist involved in an ugly triangle in which the mother of two little boys ended up being murdered in Raleigh, North Carolina, and her body was taken to Texas and dumped in a creek. A very bizarre and unusual story, and that's Bitter Remains. And right now I am working on the kayak case up in on the Hudson River,
right? Yep.
And just waiting right now to hear a ruling on whether her statements to the police are going to be able to be used in trial. And a lot of those statements, a lot of her behavior on that tape is what points to her guilt. So I am certainly hoping the judge rules in the favor of the prosecution there, because if not, there will never be any justice for the families involved.
Yeah, that's going to be a fascinating one for sure. Diane Fanning's here for just another couple of minutes. If you would like to learn more about her or her books, click on the link in the show notes. I got to ask you, and I don't want to make this political, but I want to ask you your thoughts on the FBI director's report on the email scandal with Hillary Clinton. I actually feel sorry for the guy a little bit because he's, no matter what he does, he's going to take flack from both sides. A lot of people saying that there's no justice at the
Clinton. You know, Comey is been known for a long, long time to not play politics.
Yeah.
He's just an attorney general who does his job. And I think it's a real shame that people are now all second guessing him. And I think he's a man of principle. And I feel very badly for him, too.
Yeah.
And he's caught in the middle of a storm that was not of his making.
That is the best way to say it, for sure. Listen, Diane Fanning, author of 25 books, great guest. I apologize for not having you back on the show sooner. Sometimes we slip apart, but great to have you on, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Diane Fanning. She's a heck of an author. If you want to read a good book, click on the notes and pick up one of hers, Diane Diamond, too. She's done work with everyone, Entertainment Tonight. She worked with Geraldo. She's worked at all the networks. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the FBI director and his comments about Hillary Clinton. And he's going to take a lot of flack here right now. Did he do something wrong? No. How he did it, people are going to question. But I think there's a man of integrity that did the best he can, that probably had pressure coming from both ways. He's going to say no, but we can all read into that. So let's not crucify James Comey, because he, as an FBI director, I think is doing the best job that he can. The rest of the system is what needs to be looked at. As far as the lawsuit that former host Gretchen Carlson has filed against Roger Ailes of Fox News, let's wait until the story comes out. We don't know what happened, but one thing we can say for sure is Gretchen Carlson has a whole bunch of courage to come forward, because like Diane Diamond said, that's probably going to be it for her career. I hope not, but that old boys club that's out there and the female reporters and writers and people in the news and entertainment industry, there's probably many more stories that can be told. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it here on Scared Monkeys Radio and Access Channel 7. My name's Dana Pretzer, and we'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.